Hello and welcome once again to your favorite hour of the week. It's the Arrowhead Pride Podcast. Pete Sweeney here with the player, Sean Barber, the man who likes to be known as the barbershop, Joel Thorman.
The barbershop.
And it's been one of the weirder stretches in Chiefs history. This week they're playing the 4-7 New York Jets, trying to get things back on track. 12 p.m. Arrowhead time. Back in New Jersey for this one, play-by-play. Ian Eagle, analyst Dan Fouts. How are we feeling, boys?
Feel terrific. What are you talking about? Nothing's wrong. I haven't been paying attention the last 6 weeks, though. What's been going on here?
Sean, how are you feeling, my man?
I mean, I'm surprisingly optimistic, man. I just think our better days are ahead of us. Our worst days are behind us. We can mark this game as the game where the Chiefs turn it around and go on the historic run of what'd it be about, what, 11 straight games or something to win a Super Bowl.
This should be a great podcast because I very much disagree with you. So.
I was going to say, there's some great irony here as we're talking about the Chiefs that I just heard a fire truck sound in the background.
Yeah, it's very, very
like
fitting.
Seems fitting, yeah.
Let's get to the first thing on the podcast today. What did we learn about the Chiefs and the loss to the Buffalo Bills? Sean, Mr. Positivity, why don't we start with you?
Ooh, it's kind of hard to be positive about that. I didn't learn much. I mean, I learned that just because you practice a lot doesn't mean that everybody knows what the right play is. Just because you practice all day don't mean you run the right routes. I know that it's easy to blame. The quarterback position always receives the brunt of the blame and also gets the brunt of the credit when things good happen. I'm not sold that the things that are going wrong can be solved by changing the quarterback position. I know that's always a hot topic in Kansas City. Drafting a quarterback kind of brings that up, that question on almost a weekly basis. But I don't think it's Alex. I think it starts up front. I think the guys up front have to do a better job of staying on their blocks. I think the routes that the receivers run have to be more crisp. I think the defense overall have to be more focused on their tackling, not allowing a bunch of hidden yardage. Special teams, I think. Even Dustin has to be a better punter. I think everybody just has to fine tune, get back to what they used to be doing during the win streak. No, but no Superman. We don't need no Superman mentalities. Just everybody needs to get back to what they should be focused on doing. So that's what I've learned.
I've learned that the Chiefs really don't have anything they can really hang their hat on, like a go to. You know, when things are struggling, like this is our thing that we can go to, whether it's, you know, on defense, which they did play better defensively the last couple of weeks, but especially on offense, you know, as they tried to get the running game going, you know, a few times in the second half, they went into I formation, you know, line them up, pound it. And they just, you know, couldn't get anything done on the ground. That was a little surprising to me because, you know, the Bills had struggled. So for me, just the thing is that there's nothing they can hang their hat on right now. I think that can change, but right now, I don't know what you'd say that is.
Yeah, we'll get into more of the details of why they're having problems as this podcast goes on. But as far as the loss against the Buffalo Bills go, for me, it was officially time to say that this offense is very broken. Because over the years now, we've gotten used to Andy Reid's script, the offensive script, being pretty successful at the beginning of the games. And now this is a few weeks in a row where Even at the beginning of games, they're struggling. So this turns into a situation now where you have to wipe the board clean and come up with something different. And that gets us perfectly into our next point. ESPN's Dan Graziano wrote, "The Chiefs know their weaknesses, but they still can't stop." It goes into really the long story short of the Chiefs can't stop the cover two defense. Sean, when you look at the film, does this ring true for you as well?
Definitely. I mean, the one thing, the weakness about cover two is supposed to be the seams. You're supposed to be able to attack a cover two defense down the seams because they only have two safeties trying to cover a whole field. And you get four vertical routes. You get vertical routes streaking down the field. And it's supposed to force the defensive coordinator to get out of that cover two. The cover two is what defensive coordinators, it's like their comfort blanket, their security blanket. Whenever in doubt, we can get through a down, just go cover two. Everybody knows where they belong. We might give up a check down, but everybody can play it pretty soundly. We won't give up a big play. Teams are just sitting in cover two against us, rerouting receivers with no threat that we're going to throw the ball deep. Either because our quarterback doesn't have enough time, because he's not looking that direction, or he just won't release the ball. Whatever the reason is, when it comes down to watching the film, teams are just sitting in cover two against us.
Kelsey said it point blank a few weeks ago. Also had a good quote from Mitch Schwartz saying, you know, we're doing everything we can to start this run game, but we simply can't.
And what's concerning to me is that the bye was just 2 weeks ago. It's not like they're, you know, are in the middle of the grind and they've been playing for eight straight weeks and Andy Reid doesn't have a minute to, you know, step back and look at his own team. And I've always thought that's one of the things that Andy Reid does best is analyze his own team and you know, change and adjust based on that. So, I mean, I hope it changes, but I mean, you feel like a couple of weeks ago would have been the ideal time to identify this problem, come up with a solution, and yet after the bye, you know, is probably their two worst games of the season. So I've watched enough Andy Reid that I still have some faith that, you know, they're going to turn around. They're not going to be a 10-point-a-game team, you know, but that's just – it's I don't have much to base that on right now.
And we also – when people run a cover two defense against you, cover two is supposed to be weak against the run. I mean, it's a pass first defense.
That was Schwartz's point that even against cover two, they're not able to get the run game going.
When we are seeing three techniques and defensive ends shoot gaps and get 4 or 5 yard penetration, it's hard to blame Kareem Hunt for not getting 100 yards from scrimmage or even getting the running game started when he's having to make cuts before he even gets the ball. It's guys at his knees, at his feet, 3-4 yards in the backfield, and that kind of penetration, it's hard to coach it. It's hard to prepare for it as a coach because you're not seeing it on film. There was no other film where you saw the Bills getting that type of penetration. And then on Sunday against us, it's every down they're in our backfield. And so I'm looking at it like, where did this team come from?
And there's a good stat that points out exactly what you're saying. In the first few weeks of the season, I think it was like the first 5 weeks when they were 5-0, Kareem Hunt, you know, on average wasn't being touched until he was almost 4 yards down the field. You know, first contact, and now that's just a little over 1 yard. Like, that's a huge difference.
Yeah,
Kareem Hunt is a good transition to our next point because we call him Kareem the Dream. I don't think that this offense being bad right now is his fault, but really what Thanksgiving gave you was a nightmare because the only games are the games on television, and you got to see how good this Los Angeles Chargers team is all of a sudden. We call him Kareem the Dream. This could be the nightmare for the Chiefs because we said it on this podcast. I said it on this podcast. This division is over, and the Chiefs have struggled so bad. And we said the words, this would have to be a disaster. Guess what happened? A disaster. And now the Los Angeles Chargers are looking very scary.
Yeah, Philip, he's been a guy who can always get it done. He kept the team alive, kept them alive throughout the games, and they found ways to lose it early in the season. But now they're finding ways to win. They're taking advantage of every turnover. They're scoring off a point. They're scoring points off turnovers. Their defensive ends are really getting after the pass rusher. Cornerback play is picking up. They found a second running back to complement Gordon. Keenan Allen is
balling out.
Is healthy and showing us why he was always so coveted. You know, even in fantasy football and all these other leagues, Keenan Allen was always looked at as being one of the top 10 receivers in the league. And now he's putting the statistics to go along with it. Hunter Henry, I mean, they have a set of skilled position players that you have to worry about. You always thought at the end of the game they would find a way to lose it. And now they're winning by so much. They're going into the fourth quarter up 20-some points. So it's no way they can lose it now. So
the Oakland Raiders as well haven't looked as good, but they're within a game. Is this par for the course for the Chiefs? You think it's over, and then here you go again down the stretch?
Yeah. I still have a hard time believing in the Chargers and the Raiders. I think they're more flawed than even the Chiefs are. If there's going to be, you know, another team other than the Chiefs winning the division, I think the overwhelming storyline will be that the Chiefs completely blew it, not that, you know, the Chargers or Raiders were so great. You know, they're both 5-6, so they really have, you know, very, very little room for error over the next 5 weeks we have left here.
No doubt. And I think you got to remember with the Chargers, my only point is this is a team that started 0-4. It's basically the opposite season of the Chiefs where they were able to figure things out during the season. And don't forget, the Chiefs lost to the Dallas Cowboys and the Chargers made them look silly. And I understand Ezekiel Elliott was playing, still a team game. And for Phillip Rivers to go out there and do what he did to that Cowboys defense and for Keenan Allen to look that he did, the Chiefs offense is just not there right now. And I think that's what scares me the most. But here we go. It's the New York Jets 4-7. Let's get into some Chiefs Jets game storylines. And we got to talk about it. It's been the talk of the town all weekend. Who should be starting for this Chiefs team? Should it be Alex Smith or the kid, Patrick Mahomes, the guy who they went up and got in the NFL draft? should the Chiefs make the call? Here's Andy Reid's take, and then we'll talk about it.
So, so without getting philosophical, and I'm not one to, I'm not sitting here with a crystal ball and projecting things like that. That's not how I roll. We've all got a responsibility to do our job at all positions. And we're starting with me, and that's not getting done the right way. Right? That's not, it's not one guy, and that has to be understood. It's not one person. And we've all got to pull together as a football team, in this case, an offensive football team right now, and get that taken care of as a team, not one guy. Okay? And that's about as clear as I can make. All right, thank you.
My immediate takeaway when I heard that, and we know that we hear it all the time from Andy Reid, it's on me. But this time in particular, something stuck out to me that he's blaming himself, and I think he even feels bad that Alex Smith is becoming the GOAT and what is a massive problem. Sean, I'll ask you first. Do you make the call anyway?
No. No, Alex Smith is the present. Patrick Mahomes is the future. You can't make it any simpler than that. You don't ransom the future of the organization to try to salvage a couple wins when you have a perfectly capable quarterback who's already in there. Now, the one thing I do always got to say with coaches, he does start with himself. He does look at the actual play calling as that first measure of getting things better. And sometimes, from a player standpoint, the coach, he doesn't throw the ball. He doesn't hand it off. He doesn't run it. He's not the one dropping passes. He's not the one having two people run the same route. Like, you can't coach around certain mistakes like that. You have to, when the ball.
Oh, wait a minute. You're saying they didn't draw up the double screen last week?
Rare move.
Rare call for the double screen. But when he looks at himself and he thinks about some of the plays that are being called to set up other plays, he's probably very critical of himself first and foremost. And then he starts with the O-line and then move back to the quarterback, then out to the running back and wide receivers and ask everybody to play a part in this. And Kelsey, he can speak about what other guys are doing, but you have to look at yourself. No matter how many catches he made in the game, if you're not winning as a team, it wasn't enough.
Our film expert Seth said there were a number of times where he had his hands up in the air and is very upset with, I guess, Alex Smith.
Not getting the ball, at least.
Right, at least not getting the ball, perhaps Alex Smith's throws.
Well, a lot of these, he's the primary. When you don't reroute him and you're playing cover two, you expect that tight end position to be a...
I mean, there was one time in particular I remember where it looked like a post route where he was wide open and Alex Smith just didn't throw the football.
Yeah, a lot, and that, I mean, it happens a lot of times, and it happens a lot of times where just on small option routes where he's not being rerouted. He's not being adjusted. He's not being double teamed. Everything pre-snap says this ball is going to Kelsey, and he's running wide open, and the ball doesn't go to Kelsey. So it's hard to defend the quarterback in that situation where everything pre-snap tells you it's going to him. He's your best player. Why isn't it going to him? And then it comes down to just protection, comfort level, confidence. You know, you're seeing ghosts, you're seeing somebody there, you're thinking there's going to be a weak side safety hanging under him. You're thinking that the defense got all eyes on Kelsey, right, when they really don't.
I mean, that's a whole nother topic for discussion. So before we get into the Killer Trav rabbit hole, if you want to call it that, how do you feel about the Mahomes situation?
So right after the game last week, if you ask me, I was definitely Mahomes. I think we put up a poll on our website, and it was like 90% Mahomes right after the game. You
that's,
know,
when, that's raw emotion.
Though, yeah, when emotions are highest. So I've definitely come off that a little bit this week, just because I know that there are like so many other issues going on. If the Chiefs were running the ball great and Alex was still, you know, playing poorly, like maybe that would affect my decision a little more, but they're not. I get that there's a lot of other things going on, you know, and you look at,
but why are they not running the ball?
Yeah. I mean, you can blame a whole bunch of different things. Right. Is that due to Alex Smith? Are they, you know, stacking the box?
It's one of those hypotheticals, you know, right. I think for me, I'll kind of repeat my stance. I'm sticking with it. Is, you know, everyone's saying the same thing. They know how defenses are stopping them, and they can't do anything about it. So the offense is broken for one reason or another. I have felt, and the team, as I know, and I know this, they'll never admit it, but I have felt that this offense is not going to get back to a championship level this season, right? And if that is the case, the future becomes now. there's no reason to wait anymore, because we've come to the conclusion, I think reasonably, listen, the starting quarterback, I would almost say nearly 100% right now for 2018 is Patrick Mahomes. So if you can determine that you can't beat these best teams in the AFC, like, do you really think the Chiefs right now could beat the New England Patriots? I think they'd get embarrassed. So if you can determine that, and I understand the team will never admit that, but if the personnel guys can, maybe you make that call. Maybe it takes getting the 6-6. Maybe it takes getting the 6-7. I don't want to see that happen to these Chiefs, but I just don't have the confidence that they're going to figure it out miraculously, because they couldn't against some of the worst teams in the league.
And I think that's the best point. You don't, as a fan, as a guy who's, you have passion about your team, you don't have confidence. And what you're seeing is players out there, they're not playing with like a team with confidence.
Right.
As a quarterback, when, like I said, when all the pre-snap things say to go to somebody and you don't throw it, it's a lack of confidence. When you're not set, when your feet aren't set to throw the ball, it's because you think the pressure's coming because you don't have confidence in the guys in front of you. So confidence is running rabid throughout the, throughout almost every position in the organization right now on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, it's not so much that I don't believe in Alex Smith anymore. It's that I just don't believe in this team anymore. And if you get to that point, again, you know, the team's not just going to give up, so you maybe won't see this move. But if you can get to that point, it's time. Because make the move, get him the experience now, and then he'll be ready for game one instead of maybe needing those growing pains, and then you don't have him complete player until maybe a week five.
The counterpoint being, you're still in first place,
right?
You're asking a team and a coach to give up on the season now and look to the next season, and that's just like Sean, I'm sure, can speak to that more. That's just not, I'm sure that's not
no,
how
I, and
athletes that's, work. And like, I totally get your point, but when you try to like actually apply it to the situation, you're like, oh, like, it's pretty defensible to keep Alex in there, considering the situation. If I'm Andy Reid, I don't know if I have the guts to make that call to bring Mahomes.
It's out. A tough call, but sometimes I think too you have to look at what's black and white as well. If the problem is vertical throws, and that's probably one of many problems, if not the main problem of many problems, I know somebody who can vertically throw the football.
Tyler Bray, yeah. He's inactive every game, though. Bring him up.
And he's sitting right there. You know, I know also, too, and Jeff Schwartz made the point on Twitter, this offense is built for Alex. It would be a little bit different for Mahomes, kind of that air raid style. It's going to be definitely a little bit different next year. But I'm just getting to the point where I'm losing the faith in the season. And I know the team's not going to make a call, but maybe if they get to 6-7, they will. So it just remains to be seen.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about this. I couldn't quite decide like whether their current situation makes it like more or less likely they would move on. Like, are you more likely to move on from Alex because you're right on the brink of the season and you just need to spark anything, you know, to keep going? Or is it less likely because you don't have time to change the offense very much or to get Mahomes up to speed on, you know, certain things? Because he'd be starting his first game week 13 in a big game where the playoffs are on the line. Like, that's a lot too.
I think the real question is, at any point in time in the season, do you think the Chiefs will be a game behind first place?
I think we may reach that in 2 weeks.
We'll let you know after the Sunday.
Do you have any faith? Like, would you put any money right now on this Chiefs team? Would you put any, like, I am to the point where how could you trust them? They just lost to a Giants team who is the biggest mess in pro football, Browns aside. We always have to say Browns aside. I don't know when we're not going to say that. But Browns aside, the biggest mess in pro football.
Hey. I still believe the storyline when you say Mahomes versus Alex Smith, as long as the team is not a game behind first place, you stick with what you got. You stick with the route, the path you decided to go from week one was, this is Alex Smith's team. We've drafted for the future, but this is Alex Smith's year. If there's a point in the season where they're actually a game behind first place, and now your playoff hopes are, you need something, you
on
need
the,
a spark,
on the brink, yeah.
On the brink, that will be the only situation where I think there's even a 10% chance of Mahomes getting in the game.
As you can see, hot topic in Kansas City, hot topic at this table. So it remains to be seen. You know, a win this week will certainly help Alex Smith's cause. I mean, if he can just get a win, get back on track, then I think this becomes a moot point. But you got to win first, so we'll see what ends up happening. Another storyline to watch in this game, and this is a little bit more under the radar now with all this Mahomes talk, I think, but Darrelle Revis, I know it'll be a big thing in New York. He'll be making his Chiefs debut against his old team, and the poor Jets, they couldn't win a championship with him. He plays the best football of his career with the Patriots, comes back, is bad again, and now he makes his debut for another team. And what if he propels them to a win, and the Chiefs are just in such a rut demoralizing for the Jets if the Chiefs get this win.
I kind of see Darrell having a similar game to, if you imagine, you remember how Marcus Peters played that game where it was a simple ball in the flat. He strips it out, strip score. He's hanging out, stealing the bunch of, you know, picking off plays. One of those games where he didn't have a great cover game, but he was so impactful when it came to turnovers. Like, I think that's what Revis has left in this tank. I think he can kind of examine, because of route concepts and because of film study, he'll be in the right place in the right location to make plays on balls that his skill level is not where it used to be. He doesn't run like he used to be, can't jump like he used to be, but he can be in the area where as he get a jump on the ball, he'll make a play.
That's even somewhat true of like Peters too. He's not the like most athletically gifted guy of all time. Considering he's an NFL player, he's way more gifted than I am, of course. But he does it on understanding the game so well and what the opposing team, what the opposing offense is like trying to do. I think there's definitely some of that with Revis as well.
And the Chiefs defense has kind of lost that turnover identity this year. I don't know if they need to tap into some of that Miami turnover chain business or what they have to do, but you know, last year, it seems like whenever they needed a big turnover, they could get it. I mean, there were a couple games they lost even before the playoffs began, but they got the turnover. You know, they got turnover. You had confidence, and you just really haven't seen it as much this year. Mm-hmm. Just a rut you have to get out of. Another storyline in this game, can the Chiefs beat a bad team? The Jets are not a good football team. Here's another opportunity to get a win against a bad football team. And finally, the Chiefs, if they lose, will lose to all three New York area teams in consecutive games. I don't know if that's ever happened before. You have to have the schedule first accommodate that for you, but that's not a good feeling either.
No, that's a terrible feeling. I mean, I don't think there's no historic battle between New York City and Kansas City, but to have all three teams playing back-to-back-to-back and to lose to all three would be something that would be very disheartening. The Jets, when we say they're a bad team, that comes from a skill level. They don't have a bunch of highly skilled guys in all the positions, but they are proven to be able to be in every game. They're being coached up well.
So, I mean, they put 28 on the Carolina Panthers. I don't want to put the Jets down at all because in the sense they can score points. If they put 28 points up Sunday, how confident are you? 28 points against the Panthers is a little scary, I think.
Yeah, it would. You know, it's kind of hard to like analyze this game and predict what's going to happen because, you know, I used to fall back on the fact that like the Chiefs didn't lose to bad teams very often. Like I made that point before the Giants game that there's maybe one game a year where they lose to a bad team. And even then that's like a 7-8 win Bucks team a couple of years ago. So I can't fall back on that anymore.
When was the 5-game losing streak loss? It was the 2015 that I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
2015. Those were pretty good teams too. I mean, it was a skid, but it didn't feel like this. This is new territory where you're just starting to question, are the Chiefs a good team? Where in that stretch, you were unhappy with how, you know, they were losing football games, but I don't know. It just didn't seem like
this. The one positive thing, or the hopeful thing that I come back to is that we have like 4.5 years of data on this Chiefs team, and this is by far the worst stretch, and you just hope it can't continue, right? Like, you know, like
well, we keep saying the same thing every week. That's what's so weird to me. We keep saying the same thing every week. This can't continue. Another bad team. They'll figure it out this week. How many times can we say that before we say, you know, they're just the 2016 Vikings. They're the 2015 Falcons. The good thing is the Falcons went to the Super Bowl the year after, and the Vikings look like they could be headed to the Super Bowl this year, so maybe it's next year again.
They'll just make a run at Case Keenum in free agency.
Remains to be seen. But those are your storylines for this Sunday. It's the Chiefs and the Jets, Sunday, 12 p.m. Arrowhead time. When we come back, we'll get into the X's and O's from the Professor Sean Barber on this game. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Arrowhead Pride Podcast. Pete Sweeney here with Sean Barber, Joel Thorman talking Kansas City Chiefs versus the New York Jets in New Jersey this Sunday, noon Arrowhead time. Chiefs looking to get back on track after this awful skid. First things first, Chiefs offense versus the Jets defense. We already talked about the cover two problem and what they may need to do to defeat it until the Chiefs figure it out. Isn't everything else we talk about here, isn't it just a moot point?
From a coaching 101, every time we see cover two, we check to the run. You should know it. We should know it. And you deal with, I mean, it's almost becomes, you got to dumb it down. You got to go back to the basics, which is against the cover two defense, you have to run the ball and you have to make them pay, and you force the defense to get out of it. And so if that needs to be an automatic check, if you see us doing this from the quarterback position, I know it on the radio, you can't see it, but for those that are on the live podcast, that right there, you should be expecting run downhill from Kareem Hunt.
What Sean looks like he's doing is rubbing his chest across his chest.
Rubbing my numbers, you know, kill,
numbers
kill,
and,
kill.
Numbers and nipples.
So from a football X's and O's standpoint, that's what we need to do. To remedy this offense, it comes down to running the ball, and it comes down to getting short fields. And I think that's probably one of the keys, that ingredient, that Darrell Revis ingredient, because of instinctiveness, hoping that he can make that quarterback hold the ball. Houston get a little bit of extra time, strip sack fumble. We can create some short fields for our offense. That's how you remedy offense to have some problems.
Well, who's a key player in this offense? It has to be Kareem Hunt still, right?
It's still everything revolves. He's the son. Everything revolves around our son, who is Kareem Hunt. That's what we got.
Andy Reid, former offensive line coach, the talk all week about how the Chiefs' running game sucks. People are highlighting the mistakes, you know, the offensive line is making in the run game. Man, you got to think that that's just the biggest priority this week to do, you know, whether it's, you know, changing up the scheme or doing what they're doing better. I mean, that's got to be the focus this week.
I think the offensive line is feeling it, and they feel a lot of pressure right now because they're obviously, I know Mitch Morse is a guy who loves Alex Smith. You heard him after the game saying that this is a championship caliber team. Mitch Schwartz commenting on how they need to figure out a way to run the football, because as we've been saying, if they're playing the cover two defense, you should be able to run the football. Kareem Hunt, even in, you know, not as much production number wise, he has his moments every game that shows you this is still the same dude.
Yeah.
So if you can give him the space,
right,
and open things up, and maybe he gets a, you know, a 20-yard run that we were used to seeing, a 30-yard run, maybe that opens up the pass a little bit. Maybe that gives Alex Smith a little bit more time, and then everything sort of opens up. I think the pass needs to open up the run, just like the run needs to open up the pass. Jets played the 3-4 like the Chiefs. The key players to watch is Mario Davis. He leads the team with 4.5 sacks. Leonard Williams, cornerbacks, Buster Skrine, Morris Claiborne, 8 different players with an interception this season. Alex Smith, who is not a guy who throws interceptions, has made a habit of it recently. Just like everything.
Especially late in the game. That's the worst part.
Everything is going wrong. I mean, this is a guy who didn't have an interception through the first major part of the season, last 3 games, 4 picks, and this is a Jets team that can pick off the football. And you know, with Revis on the field, they're going to want to do that right in front of him. What's the bottom line in this game, Sean?
Man, I think the offense has got to get back to the offensive line. You know, I circled O-line pride. The offensive line has to have pride in the rushing game. Pass protection is one thing, you know, creating enough time, a good pocket for the quarterback. Sometimes defenses get blitz happy, and you can't give the quarterback the time and the protection he really needs. But when it comes to running the football, just from a basic standpoint of having football intelligence and staying on your blocks and being more gritty and more hard-nosed than the guy across from me, if we see Big Cat Williams back in our defense, in our offensive backfield numerous times in the game, it's going to be a long game. If you see Double D, Demaryius Davis, tackles for loss, it's going to be a long game. And that's what I saw against the Buffalo.
Yeah, Hunt has had no room, it has seemed, on a number of plays the past few weeks.
And it still feels like he's like making people miss in the backfield. Like he's still getting like multiple missed tackles.
Instead of
every
minus
time.
Four, it's like minus two.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like exactly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, that's also like, you know, highlights like a super frustrating point is that if he gets a little bit of space, like he is the type who can make that one guy miss and turn 5 yards into 10, 10 into 20.
One thing I worry about here is the Jets D is better than their O. Never a good matchup for the Chiefs right now as they're trying to figure things out on offense. You hope they do against this Jets team. Now, flipping the page, Chiefs defense, Sean, those are your boys, number 27 versus the New York offense, number 23. They're not good either. The Chiefs defense has had a good couple of weeks. You got to be frustrated if you're in that defensive locker room right now.
It's tough. It's tough to keep I was so discouraged on the sideline. When I saw 19 minutes of time of possession in the first half, I was thinking to myself, how many times have I been on the field when there was such a disparity between the offense and defensive time of possession for that first half? And then, to still be a ball game. I mean, I would have thought we'd have been down by 21 points, giving up the ball to the other team for that kind of amount of a difference. But defensively, when you're out there play after play after play, you continue to fight, you continue to scrap. But it was frustrating to see how the Buffalo Bills just controlled and manipulated the ball up and down the field. And we weren't able to get our hands on the ball, create any turnovers, shorten the field for our offense. And then our offense was in turn going three and out. I think it was 13 first downs to one in the first half or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, this has been 2 weeks now where you allow 9 points regulation against the Giants, can't win. You allow 16 points against the Buffalo Bills. You can't win. Those are 2 point outputs where if that's what you let up, you expect to win the football game. I mean, if you're a defensive player for the Chiefs, especially thinking of guys like, I don't know, Marcus Peters, you got to be starting to get very frustrated with this offense.
And, you know, one of the things I used to say was that the Chiefs don't lose to bad quarterbacks, and then they go up and lose to Eli and Tyrod. And, you know, to be fair, there are plenty worse quarterbacks in the league than both of them. I don't think McCown's, you know, as good as both of them,
No, he's certainly not. I mean, he's still serviceable.
Right. Yeah, no, he's probably closer to Eli than anything. But, you know, I do think the Chiefs defense should have the advantage in this. You know, they haven't gotten the turnovers in bunches like they have before. You know, so hopefully it's another six INT day, you know, like they did a couple years ago against the Jets.
I think Darrell Revis in this game will be juiced. How much do we expect him to play?
Man, if I see him out there more than 20 snaps, I think that's a reach. I think you just got to certain third down situations have him in there. Like you're saying, you want him to just use his instincts, use his veteran know-how, his savvy on the field to kind of diagnose some of the pass sets. And, you know, the Jets, they've been having to pass the ball a lot. You know, they've been down. They've been having to pass the ball a lot. And you get a guy like Darrell Revis out there for, you know, about 20 snaps, and you got to expect him to have his hands on the ball or be close to the interception a few times during those snaps.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You know, he said last year he was overweight by about 20 pounds or so than where he is now. So you haven't played all year. You're just getting back into shape. I would be surprised if he played, you know, more than 50% of the snaps.
And that should be okay against the Jets, because against the Bills, Terrence Mitchell and Steve Nelson certainly looked better. They sort of downgrade to the right roles with Revis there. It's the piece you may have – I mean, we haven't seen him yet, but you assume this is the piece the Chiefs have been missing, a starting, real, true starting right cornerback. So they sort of downgrade as reserves. And those two guys are great reserve players, nickel players.
No, definitely. As a third or fourth cornerback on your team, those guys, to me, are probably some of the above-average number three and four corners on the league. But to have those guys have to play so many snaps on the edge instead of playing their natural nickel positions, I think that's where you kind of hurt. You have them kind of playing out of position to make up for the lack of a true starter opposite of Peters. Everybody can kind of get into a niche right now. And like I said, if Darrell just plays 20 snaps, get his, you know, kind of get his feet wet, get his body back acclimated to, you know, being in position, running to the ball and those things. Cause to me, that timing aspect, it's not natural. You don't just prepare for football by sitting around. You have to actually play the game. So this might be a little rusty game for him to kind of, knock some of the rust off and get back at it. But I still expect him to make some pretty impactful plays this Sunday.
Now, as we talk about the Chiefs defense, I want to bring up a name. I don't know if you guys remember this player. He's been with the Chiefs kind of a long time. You may forget. What's going on with D Ford? You guys remember that guy?
I guess what surprises me is that he's not on IR yet. No, just because he's been, it doesn't seem like he's anywhere near coming back. You know, he was on.
He just hasn't practiced in forever.
He was out for a few weeks, came back, and then was out again with what I presume is the same injury. So I'm certainly not counting on him the rest of the season. Like, I honestly, he doesn't factor in when I think of the Chiefs right now.
No, I agree. I think you just got to go ahead with Tomba and with Houston and Zomba and have those guys just really kind of go as a three-headed rotation.
No Rova mention.
Oh, my Rova. He got in last game.
I know.
Right?
And he had a few hurries, too, on just a few snaps. That was actually – I don't want to get my hopes up here, but that was actually kind of surprising.
I didn't actually hear his name get called, so I didn't – I don't know if he made the stat sheet, but he did make an impact. He did get out there, and the Rova was roaming and made some, like you're saying, some quarterback hurries and stuff like that. So I was excited about that, but I think his role has kind of been only as a second thought as far as when it comes to the normal day.
He's just so tall when he's out there. Like, they're chasing the quarterback, and like you can clearly tell it's him, even in, you know, among like huge NFL players. Like, he, TK stands out, man.
It'll be interesting as they develop him and get him a little bit less raw. Probably more so in 2018, you would expect, through another training camp, things like that. I didn't write it on the pre-show outline, so I apologize about this, but have to talk for a second about the emergence of Reggie Ragland and really what KPL has begun to do as Derek Johnson, the age, I think now in the snap counts, we can say is officially hitting him. And that could be maybe the saddest thing about this season is if the Chiefs fall out of playoff contention, this could be DJ's last shot. But you got to be happy that they may have found a viable replacement in these two guys in the middle.
Yeah, I think they're doing a really smart way of going about it, splitting up the snaps now, still keeping DJ involved because he still can absolutely be effective. It's not like he completely fell off, but you know, getting some of the other guys who might be more involved in 2018 and 19, getting them some snaps, just like it seems really logical. It makes a lot of sense. I think it's a smart move.
They gotta hypnotize Ragland to make every other team look like the Buffalo Bills because he looked like he wanted every single tackle last game.
Yeah, he was out there.
He was juiced.
He was like a man possessed.
Young Sean Barber.
Oh man, that 59. I love seeing that 59 making plays. So not only the number, but the style he was making, the excitement, the energy he was bringing. I mean, if he can bottle that up and bring it out every week, it would definitely help the Chiefs defense. And then, like you said, with KPL, I mean, he was one time I saw a running back to the flat, and I thought that Sorensen was going to make the play, and from nowhere, KPL just got, bam, and came and hit him. I mean, he was playing sideline to sideline, trying to make every play, and you like that from that Will linebacker position, that weak side linebacker position, just roaming all over the field, making plays. I like those two guys out on the field. Speaking about my man DJ, the worst case scenario is for him to be out there on the other side of a time of possession game like that for the first half, because if it drains anybody out there, it's the aging veterans that are supposed to be out there from a limited snap count standpoint to now being out there for almost 18 minutes or something. It's tough to play that way.
They pretty quietly made DJ into a part-time player. He was playing 90% of the snaps like a few weeks ago, like before the Cowboys game. And then, you know, just all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute, like he's playing 40% of the snaps now.
Yeah, I think part of it is they just want to see what they have. And I think they got a guy with Reggie Ragland. And another commonality between Reggie and KPL that you maybe sometimes don't think about is these two guys are from other teams. And sometimes when you're not homegrown, you get a little bit of an extra chip on your shoulder. I think we saw it with Jay Howard before he was released, and even with Ron Parker. I mean, that was a guy who was released like 6-7 times.
Yeah, sometimes when you cut from another team, it brings that little bit of ounce of reality that it's not a guarantee, and I need to go out here and make plays. I need to prove my worth to the organization every week. And I think that's what you get from both of these guys is they know that, you know, other teams have cut them before. So some rookies, some guys get into the organization, and the thing is almost like a guarantee that they're there. They're going to be given playing time. And they've seen playing time be taken away from an all-time great Chief. And if they don't want to lose that, they have to make plays.
They were both Brett Veach guys too, which I think is notable. Both these moves came in after Dorsey.
That is actually a great point. So here we go. Jets playmakers, wide receiver Robbie Anderson's the guy to watch. He's the hottest player. He's coming off a huge game against the Carolina Panthers, 6 catches for 146 yards and 2 touchdowns. Presumably he'll be against Revis. Jermaine Kearse, the other receiver, they're the main targets for McCown. The tight end is Austin Safarian Jenkins. And their running back combo, Bilal Powell and Matt Forte, not a ton of attempts this year because the Jets are usually behind. We've said that a couple times in a row, and the Chiefs wind up losing. Powell is the better running back at 4.5 yards per attempt. I think the expectation we have here, and we probably will all agree on this, is the Chiefs will probably hold the Jets' offense in check. In check meaning maybe a score, maybe 2 field goals. You can maybe think 13 points-ish max, maybe yeah. 16. Can the offense do it again? I think that's the biggest question this week.
I mean, the Jets are kind of a scary team to play at New Jersey, at New York. They have them at home coming off of output, like you said. They take the receivers and they just go deep, man. They do a deep and against triple coverage. He ain't afraid to throw it. There's a team with nothing to lose, and they've been playing like that since week one. People have wrote them off. I think some people expected them to go 0-16. They thought they was going to be the worst team in football.
They actually started off pretty well and then have had a little bit worse of a stretch here in the midseason.
Yeah, but they've still been scoring points. You know, even in their losses, like we said against Carolina, they still put up points. So you're not seeing a team putting up 9 and 3 and 6 type points like kind of like the Browns almost. They go out there and they play the game. They play with kind of a reckless abandon on offense. That's a lot of opportunities for our guys to make plays on the ball, and we have guys that are capable of making those plays. So,
what it sounds like to me is the perfect game to get things back on track. It's a team that, like you're saying, plays with reckless abandonment, nothing to lose. This is the game maybe where you get a few picks, Alex takes advantage, the offense looks good again, and then you just get a good feeling as you come back and try to figure this out?
Yeah, it has to be. We have left the season has been left now to no options. So there is no more. Can we get it done against the Jets? This is a must-win situation.
I agree that if it's not a must-win, it's pretty darn close then. And, you know, the run defense has been better the last few weeks. Like, playing LeSean McCoy that well, you know, I thought was really good. So I do think they can contain the running game. You know, like you said, if they're throwing the ball up deep, like, those are jump balls that Chiefs got to get. This has to be a multiple turnover game.
All right, well, those are your X's and O's for this Chiefs-Jets matchup. When we come back, we'll go with our predictions and we'll close up shop here. You're listening to the Arrowhead Pride Podcast. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Arrowhead Pride Podcast. We're talking the Chiefs and Jets this coming Sunday noon, Arrowhead time, playing in New Jersey, another game on the road. We are talking predictions for this game. Sean, we'll start with you.
I believe this is going to be an outburst of offense by our Chiefs offense. Three touchdowns in the first half. We only give up a field goal to the Jets, 21-3 at halftime. And then late in the game, as the Jets start chucking it downfield, they end up scoring a late 14 points to make it 24-17, the Chiefs.
I've got 20-13 Chiefs. If they don't do it this week, I'm done picking them. But, you know, like we just have, you know, 4 years of the Chiefs being a good team, and I just refuse to believe that they're this bad. So, you know, I'm thinking, hoping this is the week that they turn around.
You know, the Titanic hit an iceberg, and for the Chiefs, that iceberg was the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I've stayed on this ship long enough. I'm going 21-20 New York Jets. I'm just not going to fall for it again. I think the Jets win in this game. I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see it. We'll end up seeing what happens on Sunday at noon. All right. Any final words before we close up shop today on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast? Sean, tell me something good.
If you have a chance to wear your chain on the field, super glue it to your body. Tape don't work.
with Seth, you're providing the advice today.
Yeah. I'm providing advice. When you wear your chains, when you're playing football, sometimes it gets snatched. It is part of the game. Comes with the territory. Don't take it personal. If you want to fight, there's always a parking lot, and every football field has a big old parking lot. You can wait and meet the guy outside, meet him out back, so you don't make your team have to pay for your suspension. There's a lot of different ways to take care of things like that. And I'm bitter because I had Crabtree as my fantasy receiver on one of my fantasy teams, and I lost by 3 points. And I have to think he would have got me at least 30 yards.
Tape the chain to your body, you're not coming to play.
Oh, you're ready for something. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's ready for it. So, you know, strap his helmet on a little bit tighter. Just meet him in the locker room afterwards. Everybody knows where the other locker room is. Just walk over there and say, come on out here for a little bit. I got to ask you about something. And then y'all just handle like some grown men. You know what I'm saying?
Arm wrestle.
If anybody tries to fight you in the parking lot, get out of there as quick as you can. Do not believe what Sean's saying. Just leave. That's my advice.
Joel, trying to prevent a lawsuit against the Arrowhead Pride Podcast. One quick note for me. I'll be in Los Angeles this weekend. If you're listening to the Arrowhead Pride Podcast, I will be at Jalapeno Pete's at 10 a.m. They didn't name it for me. That's just what the bar is called. I'll be checking out Chiefs L.A. Hopefully all these changes, no Seth, me going to L.A., will mean a little bit different luck for your Kansas City Chiefs. Again, the game is at noon. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. For Sean Barber and Joel Thorman, I'm Pete Sweeney. This has been the Arrowhead Pride Podcast. Thank you for listening.